way.
This is the K-Pop Cast, and in this episode, we talk about comebacks from J-Hope, Haon, Hersh, Yuki of G-Idol, Kiss of Life, and the new debut Nowadays.
We also discuss if K-Pop labels should edit out former members out of songs. We get into that, as well as is Physical 100 biased against women and foreigners, and DJ Hill comes to Chicago.
Hey, but before we get into those topics, don't forget to join the K-Pop Cast listener fam on Slack. Link to the space is in the episode description.
And now for our hit replays. Replay.
Hi, I'm Virginia.
I'm Joe.
And hello, everybody. It's your PD-Nim Michaela, and hit replays are our K-pop songs we recommend you check out for the week. So kick us off, Virginia. What is your hit replay for the week?
All right. My hit replay for the week is J-Hope's Lock Unlock, featuring Benny Blanco and Nile Rodgers. I'm sure no one's surprised since I'm the resident BTS stan.
Right.
So the song is the third track on Hope on the Street, Volume 1. And it's, according to their PR, it's electro-funk pop genre. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I think it's disco pop, but what do I know? And it's the focus of episode 3 of J-Hope's dance documentary on Prime Video called Hope on the Street. And not surprisingly, the episode is about the dance style of locking. I didn't wait for you, lie, just you run, lie, don't know why, we made it right. I didn't wait for you, lie, just you run, lie. J-Hope, aka Jungkook.
If you've never heard of this you know, this solo artist from a small label.
I mean, they used to be. So if you've been under a rock, or you just do not, you're new to K-pop.
Yeah, because there are some that find this show who are.
Yeah. So J-Hope, aka Jung Ho-suk, is the dance leader slash main dancer of K-pop band BTS. He's also a rapper, singer. And then prior to being in BTS, he was an award-winning street and underground dancer. And he's currently serving his mandatory military service in the South Korean army. So reasons why it's a hit replay. If you're at all familiar with me, you might be surprised that this is the song that I chose off of his album, because in general, I despise disco pop.
I was about to say, I was like, Virginia picking a disco pop?
Right.
Hey, what? Oh.
So it has to be good, right? Because I normally cannot stand it. I hated Dynamite, and I didn't like Dynamite until recently. And by like, I mean, I've just gotten used to it because I had to stream it so much when it came out, and it's always played on the radio here. So I still don't actually like it. I don't know whether I like that song or not. You know what I mean? But I for sure really like Lock Unlock. It's just so catchy. Mm-hmm. It has such like a driving and fun, funky beat, and the high notes of Lock Unlock are like so good. So good. And there's like a good mix between like chill and then hype, and that bass line. You can hear the bass. They're just like, oh, it's so good. Ah! And then that thing of beauty with the electric guitar solo around 220. It's just, I'm so bitter YouTube like blocked my reaction video to this stupid album that, for like all territories, because you just literally see my face just go. So anyway, that's why it's my hit replay. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was, having not watched but listening to it, now that you've said that it's based off of, the song is like based off of locking or pop locking in, I definitely can see that. I actually do want to see it, so I might have to, I don't know, somebody might, if anybody wants to be generous and give me their Disney Plus password or their Prime.
Oh, no, it's Amazon Prime.
Same difference.
Yeah. You know what? I can give you the illegal links.
Okay, so like, don't say that on the podcast.
Just play. Well, then ask the nice sound engineer man to delete them.
But
We'll meet up back in the Slack.
Joe. Yeah,
right. We'll meet up in the Slack.
I think one of the things that's always made me curious about J-Hope is like how him and RM are very like intentional mm-hmm. about digging into the history of the genres that they perform, and
yeah,
like popping and locking and the and rapping in general is just this song. Is also very it's very vibey, and I also saw that Nile mm-hmm. Rodgers is off featured on here.
Yes.
Now this is what I pictured when Bang PD said that Nile Rodgers was going to be producing a producer on what was it Unforgiven with Le Sserafim. This is what I thought we were going to be getting versus what we got. So
oh, okay.
And I know that you hate disco with a passion, but like Nile Rodgers is literally disco. So I do love that for this sound. And you know how the early days of hip hop in America come out of the disco era. It's like BTS being intentional and being historians at the same time. It's just the Beyonce-ness mm-hmm. of it all. Ugh. Love it, love it, love it, love it.
Yes. So is that official? Is J-Hope the Beyonce of BTS?
Now, we're not going to do that because, like, I already compared them to Beyonce, and that might be an issue for people. So, like, let's...
But Beyonce shouts out Jungkook and Namjoon all the time because they're fellow Virgos. She lists them on the, like, Virgo calendar.
Oh, she
calendar
does. Right, whatever. Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So make that for myself as well. So like yeah.
Okay. All right. So here let's get into another artist that you can go in depth into about your opinions. Joe, what is your hit replay for this week?
So my hit replay is from an independent soul music artist by the name of Hirsch. It's not necessarily a new song, but I think it very accurately portrays the spring thaw that we're going through in the Midwest and East Coast right now. And it is the song Wings by Hirsch. Yeah. I said is a soul music artist with the independent or who distributes through the independent label Poklanos. He is a Jimbo fan turned protege. He was a fan of Super Freak Records, and in summer of 2023 at some point him and Jimbo linked up and he became one half of the neo soul duo Popomo, who I've discussed here previously. The reason why it's my hit replay, this was my most played track of 2023. The first weekend I listened to it, I played it like, it was like going back to the 90s where, remember like on a CD player, when you would have that song replaying in your CD player for like 2-3 days? I think I had this song on repeat for about a week almost because it was that good. I compare it to a spring thaw because it's very much like an early morning, and visually, like when I listen to it, I'm thinking the sun coming out and the flowers starting to either peek up out of the snow or starting to open in the early morning light. And he's talking about, I believe, because they didn't post the lyrics on this one song, but he's talking about looking at his girlfriend or significant other in the early morning light. And like talking about the deep relationship that they have or his deep feelings for her. Aww. And I kind of think that it taps into soul music's more introspective side.
The soul of soul music.
Kind of like with artists like Curtis Mayfield, like The Makings of You. I think it's that type of song. And other Philadelphia International, like where it was soul music. And it was meant to make you move and feel a certain way, but it was also tapping into something deeper very lyrically. So at some point, if anybody gets the lyrics for this so I can actually go a little bit deeper, that would be appreciated. I'm talking to you, Poklanos. But yeah, so that's why this is my hit replay.
Love it. There was something like you said, like very vibey about it, but then also like when the percussion element comes mm-hmm. in oh, at yeah. like that minute mark, it takes the song to a whole new yeah. level. And like the almost musicologist in me was like trying to analyze it, like, cause it's not like perfectly like mm-mm. on time. It's like kind of swung a little. It was like, oh, is he trying to do dilla time or something right. like that? And ooh. I'm like, I can't officially say if that's what he did with that percussion, but it's definitely that more vibey percussion that's not completely precise on beat. There's a rhythm and to
it. Like I said, cause Curtis Mayfield has that type, Al Green, who's also another, the soul singers that specialized in singing about love and relationships, that mm-hmm. that type of production they were known for, or mm-hmm. percussion they were known for. It's based in Southern soul music, and I can't really, like I said, I don't have my books and everything in front of me, but we're on the same wavelength on that one.
Right. Okay, cool. I was hoping it wasn't just me.
So he did his history, right? Like he did yes. his homework.
Mm-hmm. He did. He very much did.
Yeah, I really liked the super chill vibe and the beat. And I don't know how to explain it, but I felt like the beat had those like weird sonic bendy sounds, if that makes sense.
Like I was looking at that in the notes. What do you mean by like sonic bending?
Like it sounds like some Avatar the Last Airbender shit.
Sonic bending.
What? Dun, dun, dun. No, like sort of like pew, poo. Like, I don't know. Like,
oh.
Those kind of
like
sounds. I don't know what they're called.
Like the spacey type
atmospheric
sounds.
Atmospheric sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 but, yeah.
It's psychedelic soul. It's, yeah. It definitely has a psychedelic mm-hmm. soul vibe to it. I guess we can add in Marvin Gaye on that one then. Yep.
Yeah, like in music, like when you take a synth and then you like apply it to like some kind of thing on your, whether you can literally physically move the pitch up and down. Like that's what it kind of sounded mm-hmm. like to me. Again, almost musicologist. I'm trying to remember all of
right.
the terms. But I get what you're saying. Like definitely spacey.
You mean pew is not a actual term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what did you say? Psychedelic.
Psychedelic soul.
There we go. Psychedelic soul.
Mm-hmm. This like Marvin Gaye was known for using or making psychedelic inspired soul. I mean, now the other thing is psychedelics were usually used in the creation of that, but that there's a sound that came along with that. And I think Marvin Gaye is one of the probably most accessible versions of psychedelic soul.
Mm.
Moving on to my hit replay, again, the best hit replay of the week, you know, I'm just saying.
Of course.
And actually another fan turned protege. My hit replay this week is Kim Hown's PB&J. And we're gonna hold off and play the clip. I'm gonna give you a little bit of background time before we listen to this song, because the lyrics of this song are what scandalized me into replaying it over and over and over
just
again
nasty.
This week. Because Kim Howland, we'll get into Kim Howland. We've talked about him a little bit on the show before, but not as like a hit replay, mostly talking about his comeback from hiatus in the dungeon at Waterbomb 2022, looking like a little one hole. But Kim Howland, he is born 2000, so he's young. He's 23. He got his start on High School Rapper 2, which he won. He was the winner of that season.
Oh, wow.
And from that, he was mostly known for having this like really bright image and like being a rapper that didn't use, you know, vulgar language or didn't get into very dark topics. He also, like, I call him like my little happy bumblebee, because he, with the first scene, his interview, he talked about how mindfulness and meditation is where he gets all of his inspiration for his art. And so he discovered this character called Noah, and he said, literally in an interview, and I love him for this, he's like, I went into a journey inside myself and I found Noah, and that's who I talk with to write my music. Mm. And he's 18.
18. He's 18 wow. saying these things. So I'm like, he's since I saw him on High School Rapper, he's like, I feel like he's one of those like miraculous teenagers that I look up to and like I aspire to be, because I feel like he's like probably one of like the most introspective and like also well spoken like teenage high school rappers that I've seen, at least in the K-hip hop scene. So,
well, he's introspective about something.
Yeah, so to go back to history really quickly. So 2018, he debuts in Higher Music. He kind of gets this reputation, at least, of being mostly a feature rapper, not really having a strong presence as far as like his solo songs where it's like just him. Mm. And then in May of 2023, he is announced that he is leaving Higher Music. And literally a few days later, it is announced that he is rejoining a new entertainment company called KM Entertainment, aka Kwanmin Sik Entertainment. Kwanmin Sik being the CEO of this company, and you guys may know him by his rapper name Sikke or Sikke. Yeah, so he talked about that time, like right before he left Higher Music, as being this time where, again, he's, you know, being very introspective, not really sure what direction he wants to take his career. And Sikke is like, comes up to him because he had left Higher Music the year before, which was part of that 2022 great restructuring of companies kind of thing that happened then. And he was like, hey, you want to collaborate on a song? And they collaborated, and that's where we get their first collaboration after he left Higher Music, called Album on the Way. And he mentioned when, you know, working with Sikke, and then also after joining his label, he had so much freedom and he felt like he could really take his career into like a whole new direction, a whole new place. And so fast forward now to 2024, that new place is this album How Noah. And this song PB&J is like it's one of the B-sides off of the album. It's not the title track, but let me tell you, because one, we've been waiting for this album for a little bit because he announced it back when he announced his tour in February. Oh. So I was like really excited to kind of like see what this like first full album from him was going to be like. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, I was not expecting, again, this my little bumblebee rapper known for having a bright image and not using vulgar language to come out. And literally the first verse is the clip that we're going to play right now. Some 360, girl, I'm gonna make you hot. Can I take off your clothes and put it in my mouth? Your body juicy, handling diamonds, sticking fingers, it's a finger licking good. I'm a slipping good on a brush, patrol bus goes up and down, left and right. Like I watch, I'm in the game. I'm on the road, I'm on the soft bread. It's so uncrustable. PB&J, PB&J, you're my angel for my empty stomach. Peanut butter with the jelly, you're more than a munch, girl, you're my love. He's cursing, he's talking about eating girls out, he's like, I couldn't process. I was on my walk to my gym listening to this. I had to stop. I had to take a moment. I had to breathe. I was like,
Michaela, what? I just have a question. So like,
yes,
he gets taken under Sikke's wing. What did you actually think was going to happen? Because like Sikke, for those of you who don't listen to Korean hip hop, Sikke is basically the Korean Big Daddy Kane. If he's not,
he has that song with Jesse too, right? That wet song.
Yeah, the wet song. And then there's a song he has called Shiba, which like is basically the Korean version of Lil Scrappy saying, "Is you gonna marry a nigga or what?" But like being under Sikke's tutelage, like what did you think was gonna happen, Michaela? That's my question. Like, this is Mr. Panties. Like, Sikke is known for being Mr. Panties on the stage.
You know, right, Joe? I should have seen it coming. Now that you mentioned that, I guess I was just so used to, again, when I think of a howling, I don't even think of Waterbomb Howlin'. Like that one has scarred me. I think of the artist that he was after, which he mentioned, like that version of himself, that bright version, you know, that was the version that people really liked, and it made him a lot of money because he got a lot of sponsorships when he had that kind of style in his music. But he actually had an interview about this question because people were saying that he's gone like hook, which is like he's gone to the dark side.
Oh,
but you know, again, being the introspective person that he is, he's like, it's not that I've gone to the dark side. It's like, I've always had that dark side in me. Like, there's the yin and the yang. And before, I was only showing you the yang. Now I'm showing you the yin side of myself.
I'm kind of interested in how the reception is going to be for this, because I remember when Album on the Way dropped, the perception between the Korean audience and the international audience was kind of like, everybody thought that Shikke and Haun were talented rappers on their own, but Album on the Way is very grime and drill. And everybody was like, what is this? Y'all are just like trend chasing when y'all are really talented on y'all own. And so there was kind of a lukewarm reception to Album on the Way. So I'll be interested in seeing what the reviews or the fan reaction to this album was going to be. But PB&J, though...
Yo, maybe he can get a GIF.
A GIF or a Skippy a partnership?
Or like a fucking Welch's.
Or like if Lotte makes a jelly or jam or something like that.
Right. I love it.
Like,
And you know, I joke, but I do love this, and I love this album, and I love being able to see this version of Haun, though I'm still getting used to it. You know, I clutch my Nina pearls.
I think I do enjoy the sound of it because it very much feels like now to me, because I was on the Afrobeat wave before a lot of folk, it sounds like WizKid.
before Penameco.
Way before Penameco. But like Wiz, it sounds like this the WizKid song that went viral in like 2016, 2017. It had a Drake feature, but it kind of reminds me of that. I'm forgetting the title of the song. If you listen to Afrobeat, you know it. But yeah, that's kind of the vibe that I got off of this track, which it fits.
Yeah. No, go ahead. No,
well, that was all. Because like I want to hear, because like I'm looking at these notes in Virginia. Like, we're on the same wave. Like, we do have to talk about the nastiness. So, like, go ahead, please. Thank you.
I mean, these lyrics are just filth. Like, filth. And I stand. We stand. We stand filth. We stand sex positivity. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like there's something about, I don't know. Is it an island vibe that they're trying for, too?
Yeah.
Is it... Or like that kind of, like, is that what it
Afrobeat
is? Afrobeat
in like the mid-2010s had this kind of blending between Caribbean vibe meets African, or specifically Nigerian vibe. Oh. So there was kind of like this kind of like, because WizKid, I thought WizKid and Pato Ranking, I thought they were Jamaican or Caribbean artists, when then I found out they were actually Nigerian artists. So like that's the kind of vibe that I'm getting from. It's like, you know, diaspora, the African diaspora meeting in somewhere in the middle.
I mean,
yes,
it's great.
It does set the sexy vibe very well.
Yes, and just all this euphemism for jelly and sweet. Sweet taste, and I'm like,
But I love though the last line of it is he says in English, so you can't miss it. He's like, you're more than a munch, girl. You're my love. So it's more than just like, he's not just talking about a one night stand. He is talking about like a woman that he's like,
speaking of which,
appreciating.
Like, you're more than a munch. Speaking of which, is there like an Ice Spice feature on the way? Because that munch is that slang is very specific to Ice Spice, rather. So that would be interesting.
It?
Yeah.
Because it's not new slang.
No, but
maybe
like,
it's new in this context. Maybe I don't know the context, but munch has always been associated to me with his specific topic about PB&J eating.
Yeah. But the context that he uses munch in, like, you're more than a munch. Like, Munch, the song by Ice Spice, that kind of brought that back into the zeitgeist, is basically about her doing Hit It and Quit It on guys. Like, I'm just using him for head, and then I threw him out. So he's saying, I want to be more than just head to you, which, like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it depends on how good he is at it.
Yeah, look. Michaela, why did you pick this song? I don't feel like being this nasty.
Anyway, so guys, go check out the rest of this PB&J and the rest of Howlin's album and all of our hit replays from this week. So we're going to move on from this topic and move on to our next section for this week. Hot issues / how you things, you know, things within the how you verse related that we also wanted to talk about today other than music. So we're going to kick it off with our main discussion really quick, because this was a question that we put out in our Slack. So if you wanted to get a little hint at some of the topics that we come up within our show, go join the Slack for those. But with the news recently of Rise Sunghan being edited out of the official release of the song Siren, we wanted to ask the question, kind of talk about the question of, should K-pop labels be editing out former members from songs?
I think I agree with most people when I say no. It feels like a very sanitizing version. Like it's like you're sanitizing history. You know what I mean? And everyone knows that sanitization doesn't actually lead to change, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think it's as serious as like a Holocaust denial or whatever. But, you know, there's something to be said about wanting, I mean, where do you draw the line on this, right? Like, what offense or what type of thing would require you? You could just do this. You could like threaten to do that to like keep artists in their place. You know what I mean? I feel like it's a really bad precedent. And also it doesn't allow for growth.
I think I'm going to say no as well.
And not on labels editing out.
Yeah, not on members. Labels editing out, but unfortunately there are many like historical and recent examples of this. Recently, mm-hmm. I think the two Chinese drama actors, Zhang Zahan and Zheng Xuan, when they got canceled by or blacklisted by the Chinese government. Zhang Zahan's, in his case, he was edited out of not his famous show, which is Word of Honor, but the shows that were about to come out, they either had to reshoot or they digitally edited a different actor in for the face shots. And then Zheng Xuan, when she got in trouble for tax evasion and surrogacy, they just like full stop had to either reshoot or edit her out of her roles in her upcoming dramas. Also, when you edit people out of certain things, to me, it reminds me of like the Jim Crow South. Whenever there was like a positive role, quote unquote, positive role for black people in film in the 30s and 40s, when the film got distributed to the American South, they would edit out any like performances or anything showing black people in a positive light. And also like when we edit blackface out of old movies like Holiday Inn, rather than acknowledging that that actually happened because people don't want to think of Bing Crosby doing blackface, even though that's something that actually happened.
Yeah. It's for one, especially like you talked about history of like this happening in K-pop, like specifically for SM, like I think of first like mm-hmm. Jessica being edited mm-hmm. out of Catch Me If You Can. Yep. I think of, you know, technically it wasn't for SM, but for Starship when Wonho was, you know, had left the group and he was edited out of the music video, or they recorded the music video after, but he was still in the song.
Yeah.
Like, and then I think of recently with Lucas, like he is no longer in NCT anymore, but SM held on to him and gave him a solo career.
Yeah.
Like, but with Sunghan, like they didn't, it's not that they announced that his indefinite hiatus is like him leaving the group. Like if you're going to go through the trouble of editing him out of current promotions, then just announce that he's not going to be in the group anymore. Because, like, I love the point that Syed mentioned, was like, the longer that he's on this hiatus, the harder it's going to be to reintegrate him back in, especially if they've already gone through the trouble of erasing him.
And the thing that's always kind of perplexed me about this is we actually getting, like, Sung-hun is actually getting more of a reaction versus Lucas, where it was radio silence for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's because, like, yeah. And actually, like, the funny thing about Zhang Zhan is that kind of happened around the same time. And so I feel like with Lucas specifically, they were watching to see how that happened and they figured out their strategy there. Because Zhang Zhan is basically dead and to rights in China. But studios and music companies figured out he had a large enough fan base outside of China that he could survive. So I kind of think that's where SM is coming from on Lucas. But I think, like, Sung-hun is, like, so minor in comparison. So I'm just like, why edit him?
Can you catch us up on what actually happened?
So with Sung-hun's case, there were several things that happened. A lot of it coming up from, like, before he debuted. So, like, videos of him underage drinking and smoking and, you know, partying. And then after he debuted, there was a video of him on, like, a private chat with, I think, another idol member and then one other person, because there was only three people, I think, in that call, where he was, you know, allegedly putting down a female idol for her dance ability or some kind of, like, negative speech towards her. And so it just all kind of exploded into him doing this hiatus. And, like, again, I haven't seen him. I don't know what he's doing right now. So basically SM disappeared him from the group in order to kind of save their new little boys. But he so far they've the whole group has been having issues. Like, it's his issues aren't even the really? Beginning of it for Rise.
Yeah.
Because that Lucas comparison is pretty apt then, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's the comparison that a lot of people on social media at least have been making. I mean, well, like, did YG, like, lastly, did YG even bother? Like, the funny thing is, unfortunately, that group also has a lot of issues. But when YG didn't edit Seungri.
Oh, gosh.
Like, it's a terrible comparison, but, like, if anybody technically needed to be edited out, it was him.
Right. No, I get it.
But YG didn't. Man, like, they cashed in on that Netflix series as long as they could. So.
But, you know, this does kind of relate to other things. And again, it's not exactly the same, but it's comparable. So I imagine it's happened in other fandoms, but I only know the BTS one this well. But, like, in the Permission to Dance concert series, right, that they play on Amazon Prime, they edited out two songs. I think they edited out Disease and Home. And that's because one of the writers of that song, of those songs, was convicted of sexual assault.
Oh, wow.
And they went back and, because of fan protest, I might also add, they went back and deleted those songs.
Right.
Which is very troubling to me because, again, then, like, well, this is very selective, right? Like, are you supposed, like, so many people worked on that song. How come that one person's fault erases all their hard work, right? And then second of all, you can't just go around deleting things that people piss you off about. Like, if fucking Woody Allen still has a fucking career, like, I don't understand why. Okay, sexual assault is obviously a serious thing, right? But, like,
yeah,
you know, like, at what point are we just going to delete everything? In that case, we should just cancel everything that has ever been produced in America because of, like, mass genocide and slavery. Like, come on. Like,
I mean, it's kind of, because it's like with Lady Gaga when she for Do What You Want, because when that song first dropped, it was R. Kelly was the feature.
Oh.
And everybody was like, girl, what are you doing? Mm. And like after his second trial that he went to prison, actually went to prison for, started, she put out another version of the video and the single with Christina Aguilera instead of R. Kelly because of the fan reaction or the public's reaction. So
then that just makes this whole situation more outrageous, because we're bringing up situations where comparatively the things that Sung Hong has done are
that's like nothing. Every teenager in America. And I'm pretty sure he is not the only person to have done so in Korea. He just got caught, right?
I was like, because from what I know, they smoke like 40, 50-year-old men.
Right?
No, even there have been SM NCT members that have just got caught up. It's like they were caught smoking or vaping inside and they had to make public apologies.
Mm-hmm. And not that, again, I am not this like pro smoking, pro vaping agenda. And also, oh my God, please read the room. Like, this is South Korea you're talking about. This is not America. Like, Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, sorry. I didn't mean to like.
No, it's okay. I think that we'll continue this conversation in the Slack, because this is definitely not the end of this discussion for this topic, but we wanted to kick it off here. So like always, guys, if you want to share us your thoughts on this topic or read the other thoughts that people shared, I saw Liz and Syed had a lot of really good points that I think people should go check out. So you can check that out in our Slack. So moving on to our next How You Thing, Joe. So what's your How You Thing for this week?
So my How You Thing for this week is I went to go catch DJ Hyo, also known as Hyoyeon from Sunyoshide or Girls' Generation, do a DJ set at Soundbar here in Chicago. So I'm on Instagram and I'm on Instagram and I just see this post saying DJ Hyo at Soundbar this Friday. And I'm like, let me go and just figure out what's going on. So curiosity got the better of me. So, and I'm not a club type person. I kind of figured that out as the night went on. Got there too early, first of all. so I got there when the club opened.
So you were the only one there, right?
No, actually and here's the thing. The audience was like maybe more regular club goers versus K-pop people. A lot of the K-pop fans came early.
Sure, they know what's up.
But Hyoyeon didn't go on until like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning?
Well, because it's a nightclub, right? And usually in nightclubs, the headlining DJ doesn't go on till like 1:30, 2 o'clock. I think she went on, if I look at my notes, before I got deep in the dancing, she went on at about 1:30 in the morning. And I didn't know what to expect, primarily because, you know, we hear about like celebrities becoming DJs all the time. And they're like, you know, you're doing this for fun. But when I tell you, so first off, if you don't know, Chicago is the birthplace of house music.
Is it?
Yes. So I was getting over the shock of paying $20 for rum and coke. And ended up paying $40 because they made them strong. And yeah. But she opens up her set with a EDM remix of Genie. And it was really good.
Ooh.
But then she did something that showed me that, one, this is actually going to be a real DJ set and you are going to dance. So she goes into a little bit more EDM. But then I hear, if you're from Chicago or you listen to house music, I hear this ooh-oh-i-e, 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 Brighter Days, which is like a Chicago house classic called Brighter Days by Kashmir, featuring the vocalist DeJay. And when she played that, I was just like, oh, you knew you were coming to Chicago. And so after that, she kind of jumps between a top 40 and a top 40 in-house and EDM throughout the night. But she does drop in. She sang Sober.
Wow.
And she sang Dessert. And then she closed with Forever One. And she made it work. But over the course of the whole set, which was like an hour and a half, 2 hours, it was like a real set.
Wow.
Outside of her music, mm-hmm. outside of her music, it was mostly top 40 hip hop, EDM, and house music. And that floor was jumping, I need to tell you. There were about four or five, no, actually seven or eight light sticks, Girls' Generation light sticks.
Because of course.
Shout out to the ladies that got the table on stage left or stage right of the DJ booth where Hyoyeon was, because all of them had their light sticks. I saw like two or three on the floor. And initially it was kind of like we shared Johnny's set at a Songkran party in the Slack, mm-hmm. where everybody was just standing there looking at them with their phones. It was kind of like that at first, mm-hmm. but when she turned the house music on, that's when the place went up, and she just had us in the palm of her hand, and she was like talking to us and saying, "Do you want to party with me?" and like keeping the vibe going.
Whoa.
And at some point I stopped taking notes because the groove got so good that I actually started dancing.
That's awesome.
So, but it was amazing. I'm not even going to lie.
Really?
She did it was really good. It was so good. I was like, I think the thing that just blew me away was the fact that she knew she was coming to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she made sure to work house music into her set. That's the thing that made me just like, oh, girl, you were serious about this.
Right?
You
That's
did your
awesome.
Homework.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So next time Hyoyeon comes to Chicago, I will be going. I will be in attendance.
I'm going to try to go too. That sounds awesome.
Seriously. We should get Peter to go.
But yeah, that was my hot issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have anything else you wanted to add, Virginia?
No, I... surprising no one, I do not enjoy the house music, so I'm so glad.
Oh, no. Oh, we'll get you one day.
Okay,
no.
Let's move on. What is your hot issue, how you think, so this week, Virginia?
Mine is about the Physical 100, season 2. If you have not seen it, please fast forward.
Yeah, we're going to spoil. We're going to spoil for the next at least 4 to 8 minutes.
So I really love the show Physical 100, even after there was like accusations of rigging the ending for last year.
Yeah, season 1.
Because I really just like seeing all sorts of bodies and abilities and speed and just, wow, I didn't know the human body could do stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you know, theoretically, but then to see like people just perform these like insane feats of physical prowess, you're just like, holy shit, I am just a potato. That's cool. So season 2, I thought, hey, they must have learned from season 1. They would make it slightly more fair for women.
Mm. You thought that, huh?
I thought it wrong. Like, season 2 is perhaps less diverse. Not perhaps. It is less diverse.
Yeah.
Except for the white dude and the mixed, the biracial Korean dude. So yay for the paler representation. But like, at least last year, I think one of the contestants... The one of the only black contestants last year, he was through like half of the show at least, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I was just really disappointed because I feel like the casting, you should either not include the thing about race, like, mm-hmm. Because you had one black dude who got knocked out in the first round, right? He was kind of targeted, you know, they tried to play it off as like flattering, but like he was, and he, I think he was like a YouTuber or something. He wasn't like an athlete, right? Like
Emmanuel is a, cause I follow, cause I do lift. Emmanuel is a IFBB pro.
Oh.
So he's a professional bodybuilder.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he does fitness content in Korea.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Also, I should have known something was up because he did a collaboration like 2-3 months ago with Jung Dae-jin, who's, I believe, also featured on this season. I was like, random black person on one of the Korean bodybuilding channels or YouTubes I watch. Okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, I don't, oftentimes like the bodybuilders don't do as well, right? Because they have muscles, yeah. But they don't do other things, if that makes sense. Yeah, they look good.
The joke between like CrossFitters and powerlifters and weightlifters is functional fitness versus looking pretty, which like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Right.
But you know, that one bodybuilder, what was his name? Thanos.
Oh, okay. Like, that's
true. Kim Min-soo.
Yeah, he's just enormous. Again,
but also, like, he played rugby. So, right. Like, he was both functional and aesthetic.
Dude, that man's body was ridiculous.
Just, yeah, and 100% natural, right?
You know, sure. Steroids are natural.
Look, hopefully we see him at Mr. Olympia this year. Hopefully.
but my point is, like, they really did not... They were not very racially diverse. And if you're going to say you're racially diverse, I get that Korea is pretty racially homogenous, but it's also not as racially homogenous as everyone says, right? Like, so they could have done way better.
Yeah. But the thing is, I kind of noticed this with the way that they structured the games this season versus the first season in general. Like, I think they really just did not care about diversity as much as far as the first season, again, being the first season, it was so much more important for them to try to, you know, prove that any kind of athlete could have gone and done well on this show. Like, they even structured, like, the final team battles as of, like, they have this one thing where, a climber could do this, and he's kind of tiny, and, like, oh, they have this one thing, the strong man will definitely be able to do this. And so by the end, you kind of ended up with these, you know, final five guys or final four guys that had a bunch of different kind of skill sets to make it to the final. Whereas with this one, and Kate in our Slack even mentioned that she was like, it's hard for me to differentiate the teams because they didn't really plan to be honest.
Yeah.
I feel like that wasn't even the goal. It was just, they didn't try to make it even. They just wanted to get to the guys that they knew could do well in the challenges that they had created.
Yeah. And then, so like, at least I feel like last season, there were ways for women to do well.
Like, yes, you know, they were definitely, yes.
Right? Like, I'm not saying I was under any delusion that women would win, ever, right? But at least they had a shot.
Yeah,
but
the bus leverage qualifier is like a great example of like what they should be doing more of in the show, where it's like
proportional,
you're fighting against yourself. Mm-hmm. Like they had to lift up, if you haven't seen it, their bust that everybody creates of their bodies, as well as like 40% of their own body weight, and they have to hold it up for like as long as they can, or to be not be the last person to hold it up. Those kinds of challenges are where it can be a little bit more even, because you're really fighting against what you individually can do physically against other people.
Yeah. And then like what pissed me off about like the opening qualifier, it was running, right?
Yeah. And running on a very specific kind of treadmill that not many people know how to use.
Exactly. So they had like the Olympic track and field runner. I don't know if she was Olympic, but she was on the national team, right? Like she was like, that's her job. And she didn't even place top 10. Why? Because they did it by stride. They did it by distance. You're telling me this like 5'4", maybe at most, tall woman can beat like some like 6-foot dude with this enormous stride? Like one of his strides is like 30 of hers? You know, like it's just, it's so, even stuff that you thought could have been fairer, we're not, you know? And then the majority of the challenges were strength-based, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Which is why you had these big dudes and these CrossFitting dudes making it to the end.
Yeah, and it's just
because that's their bag, really.
Yeah, and it's so cruel. Like, don't lie. Like, if you want it to be, like, about bigness, bigliness, then just say that. that, right? But like, don't say like everyone has a shot. Bullshit. Yeah. I don't care how strong you are. Like, a woman is not dragging 150 kilogram barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's just cruel. Like,
right. Joe, wrap us up. But did you have anything else that you wanted to add for this one?
Yeah. So with the first season, and I believe I remember I posted something in the Slack, and I did save the notes, but like, it seemed like once this administration, because like nothing in society, any society happens in a vacuum, mm-hmm. but once the current administration came into power, there was a lot more masculine, Korean masculinity content that kind of came out.
Yeah. And like even the networks have their own version of Physical 100 now. Like JTBC just did one with like college athletes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like making sure to show that there's a different, like that Korean men are manly in a way that you don't see in K-pop or in K-drama. Like there is this type mm-hmm. of like tough jobs or tough as nails or Top Gear or dirty jobs in America and the UK. And yeah, the first season actually was way diverse because I just remembered one of the popular drag queens in South Korea, Vita Mikju, was on that season. And I don't think there were any, now I don't know if they were like openly queer on,
they had the, as openly the male queer on the ballet dancer, I guess that was there.
No, Vita Mikju is a drag queen that pole dances. I don't think that's in the same.
Right.
But that's kind of been, like, even though I do like watching these types of shows, I'm just like, there seems to be something very
sinister
targeted mm-hmm, here. Mm-hmm. And like when you talked about how a lot of the people that got promoted in the promo were either Korean, Asian, or white versus like Emmanuel didn't really get promoted as much. Mm-hmm. Even Miracle, who was on last season, didn't get promoted as much. Only the Asian, Japanese, like Korean, Japanese, or white people got a lot more of the marketing mm-hmm. space in season one.
I will say, though, one of my Asian American male friends, he did appreciate that it did show a different type of Asian masculinity.
Yeah, which is why season three is going to be so interesting, because it's not just Korea for season three. Oh, they announced really? It right at the end. It's Physical 100 Asia. So whatever that means, that's what we're going to get in season three. So I'll be honest, I'll be seated for that one. Like I still really enjoy
this
show.
No, I love this show. I love this show because I feel like if you filmed it in America,
people would die.
The sportsmanship would be non-existent.
Yeah, like, no sportsmanship, and I know people will die. I hold my breath every episode looking at how people are hurting themselves in these competitions, and I'm like, how has nobody died on this show yet?
I was going to say, like, we do have this in America, though. It's like American Ninja Warrior, The Challenge.
But it's not team. Survivor, but those aren't really team honest. As much.
They aren't team-based because, like, America's individualistic, yes. right?
And I just, but, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're similar.
We'll see what happens in season three and see if they listen to this episode and make those changes that we've asked for. Probably not.
No.
Anyway, so wrapping up this episode, we are going to kind of quickly go through a few of our daebak or nots for this week. So we're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about headlines from this week. So our first daebak or not for this section, we're going to talk about the new boy group out of Cube nowadays with their debut, OOI. So are we daebak or not on this?
No.
No, not. But I do appreciate y'all for putting their names on the...
Yeah, right. Great, great debut. We love a name tag. Now I know who my bias is right away. I'm invested a little bit more. Yeah, it's a daebak for me, actually, because this reminds me of a lot of other debuts mm-hmm. that I like. So, and I can't not like it. And, you know, Cube actually spent some money on them. Like, the music video was great. I love the concept of them, like, trying to catch Cupid as, like, Cupid being an evil like gremlin creature thing. I love it. I'm here. I can't wait to hear more from them. And they need to do really well, because like I mentioned in the outline, they are Cube Entertainment's last chance. Like, as far as the only really group that they have said themselves that makes money is G Idol, and this is their first boy group that they've debuted after all their other boy groups have left them after like 9 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Mm. So we'll see.
Okay, well, now I feel bad saying no.
No, stand in your truth, Virginia. If you didn't like the song, it's okay.
I like the MV. I think the song just reminded me of an NCT / Stray Kids song.
And again, that's probably why I like it.
Yeah, okay.
And that's probably why you don't like it.
This is Ms. Banger Clanger we're talking about.
I do like NCT, but not always.
So. Okay. All right. So our next hit, Daybreak or Not song, we have Yuki and her latest solo comeback, Could It Be? This is actually a pre-release. This isn't for her first mini album. So what do we think of Could It Be? Because it's a Daybreak for me, I'll be honest, though surprising.
Daybreak, yeah.
Me too. Yeah. I wasn't expecting her to want to be Taylor Swift in her solo tracks. Mm-hmm. But luckily the teaser that she released, this has the actual title track a little bit more dark, a little bit more like horror inspired. So I'll be excited to see when that comes out.
This is the one where she has like that really cute sweater, right?
Yes.
Yes. I want that sweater also. But I really like the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the entire, like, just making sure, like, the entire, this is English,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's all in English.
And no, like, I know, like, I had to make sure because I just listened to it and I forget stuff really quickly. Mm-hmm. But, like, on the album, Yuki is responsible for doing the translating to English. Yeah. And you can tell, and like, it's really good. She has a grip on English. Like, Rolling, I think, is G Idol's best English song. But outside of that, this kind of fits that same summery vibe as Heartburn by Sunmi.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very much a top down, cruising down the 101. Well, the side that's not the ocean. but yeah, it's very light and airy and feel the sun on your face. I like it.
Daybreak. Daybreak. Okay, so our last music Daybreak or Not for this week is Kiss of Life has come back with their song Midas Touch.
Day to the
Yeah, Deva.
Oh, it's so good. It's, oh, everything I loved about 90s pop music is in that song. It's like the bubblegum pop, the Britney Spears type bubblegum pop of the 90s with the New Jack inspired pop of New Edition in one song, and I love it so much.
Okay. It's a not for me, but for like a really stupid reason.
Tell us the stupid reason. We love petty.
So there's like, okay, so I sat down to, because, you know, somebody, I forget who posted it in the Slack, but I was like, oh, excited. And they mentioned like how, oh, there's like Britney inspired visuals in the music video. I'm like, cool. So I watched it on my phone. And then before I recorded, I sat down to listen to it again with my headphones on. And unfortunately, when I actually get to the audio of the song, there's this one like offbeat percussion element that sound like somebody's hitting the lid of a trash can with a stick. And it's just, I can't not hear it once I heard it. And it just ruined the whole song for me.
Oh.
Well, it's a good thing I just heard it on the TV on my laptop.
Yeah. If I just listen to it from playing from far away from my phone speaker, I can like it again. But until then, it's kind of a nut. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. No. Lean into it.
Stand in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's move past this. Let's move to our few headlines for the week. So we've got EXO Lay is set to release his next solo album in April or this month. And it's going to have a Korean version. So yes. He's going to be promoting in Korea again. And maybe he'll collaborate with a few guys. You know, maybe EXO. We'll see.
And maybe he'll do another tour and visit San Francisco.
Hopefully. Hopefully, we can only hope. So our next headline is GOT7 Youngjae is leaving Sublime Artist Agency. And now the question that I have with this is Jackson going to leave too?
Is he also in Sublime?
He is. Oh. So Youngjae and Jackson both joined Sublime after they left JYP.
Maybe. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but the way Jackson moves, I think he might just go into self.
You know, the way Jackson moves.
If not now. That too. But I think business-wise, rather, the way he moves, I'm not expecting it soon, but I do expect, like, he'll do something under Team Wang. Mm-hmm. Like, promotion.
I'd like to do something
like,
under
he's really
Team
serious
Wing.
About setting up his... Nope, we're not doing that.
Okay, we'll follow up. I'm very curious to see where Youngjae decides to go. Like maybe all the other GOT7 members are trying to make their own solo label. We'll see. That's kind of my tinfoil hat theory is like maybe GOT7 is trying to reconvene. But you know, that's just me hoping that they'll cut.
Yeah,
that-
you go ahead and keep hope alive.
All the agassiz.
Yeah. All right, so our next headline is Icon's Bobby and Chanwoo announced their military enlistment. And I'm like, I knew it was going to happen, but I think I convinced myself that it wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So this was news to me. And I was like, oh, right, that's why they did the tour and mm-hmm. we got that album. And mm-hmm. it's just yeah. sad to see them go.
Yeah.
So I'm a not on this one. Yes. If you get to-
We'll say not on that one. Yeah. Because it's always sad.
Yeah. Okay, and then the next, so our last two pieces, we've got some relationship news, ? So it was announced on online that Taeyeon of Twice and Zion T, the solo R&B dude, are in a relationship. So are we Daebak or not?
Yeah, we're
Daebak. Yeah, I'm Daebak on dating. It's just... I don't know if JYP said, you know what? Y'all are grown now and y'all done made y'all money. Maybe money hand over fist. Y'all go have fun. That's kind of what it sounds like because like we had Jihyo two weeks ago.
With Sunghan Bin from Physical 100.
Hey.
From Physical 100, yeah.
And he's also Olympian, but I know him from that show.
Yeah. But like, it's also like Zion T. That's the thing I didn't.
I always thought he was not on this team.
Oh. You know what? Fair.
I mean, be fair, he could be on multiple teams. Okay.
Yes.
We're inclusive.
That's
here.
True.
Yeah. So, but I was, mm-hmm. yeah. Don't come at me, people.
I
see. Now I'm trying to figure out how you got there, though. That's never occurred to me.
I'm Daebak on this relationship, but I'm not on people coming for Zion T's appearance because I think he's attractive.
Oh,
we talked about this the last episode I was on. I told y'all a lot of your pop stars in the West and in Asia. Y'all, if she likes it, you gonna have to love it. And also, like, I'm a Zion T fan, so, like, I will ride.
Right.
And it's just like, what do you look like?
That's true, but not everyone can be an idol. And that's all I have to say about that.
Damn.
Okay.
But damn.
I'm just glad somebody loves him, okay? We should just be happy. Mm-hmm. That sounds like shade, too.
No,
I don't mean to
all...
sound like shade all the time.
No, it's okay. Not all love lasts, because our last headline for this episode is apparently Karina from aespa and Lee Jae-wook, the actor, broke up after a few, maybe like a week of their relationship being announced.
But they weren't really dating, right? They were just friendly. Yeah.
They were
like,
talking.
I feel like...
They were, like, in American dating terms, they were talking.
Right?
They
like, so... But part of me is like secretly hoping that that's what they're telling everybody and they're still.
Right.
Right.
Because apparently SM stock couldn't take it.
Oh, really? Oh, for fuck's sake. Wait, aespa is SM? Oh, yes. aespa is SM.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Dang. Like, let right. people yeah. date.
Let idols bang.
We're over 18. We see each other constantly. Like, let grown folk do
what
grown
folk do. What a waste of hotness. Like, what sort of horrible, like, dystopian world are we living in if the hottest people, hottest, most talented, most bendy people can't fucking fuck? Like, please, for the love of, let these genetics through, you know? Like,
I love it. That's a great note to end the episode on. So, wrapping up this week's Hot Issue, How You Think, Hit Replay episode for the week of April, let our listeners know where they can find you on socials, Virginia.
So, yeah, send your agreements and love to at the Mandarin Mama on Instagram or, I guess, Twitter. And I'm also at VirginiaDuan_official. That's my author page.
You can find me at Journalistic Joe, all one word, on Instagram. And if you are in the Philadelphia area, I will be at Asian Arts Initiative on the 27th and the 28th for a concert with concert and discussion with Che Chin and Geeta Dayal. The discussion is on Saturday, April 27th, from 4 o'clock to 5:30 p.m. And I believe from 8 o'clock to 9:30 is the concert. Concert tickets are $20. And the conversation on Saturday afternoon is a free will donation. So that's where you can find me. Oh, and also, depending on when this comes out, you can catch me at the Ben Young concert at the Avondale in Chicago tomorrow
night.
Okay,
brag about it. All right. You can find me on the K-Pop Cast Slack. I am your PD Nim. And you can always find all of us at the K-Pop Cast Slack. Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
See you.